Well, you've already heard from earlier speakers aspects of the way sleep can be judged based on behavioral criteria from Jerry Siegel's talk. And you've also heard from Paul Shaw about aspects of sleep in the fruit fly. And so I want to sort of elaborate on both of those starting points to talk a little bit about some of the characteristics of sleep in an invertebrate, and then to talk about how general sleep might be among invertebrates, and what does that mean, and what might that tell us about what sleep is for and about its various functions. So as Paul carried out when he was a postdoc at our institute, a series of experiments to show the behavioral criteria for sleep in the fruit fly, work that was also being done in a very similar way at the University of Pennsylvania by Joan Hendricks and Vita Segal and Alan Pack. It was well known that flies have a daytime activity phase and a nighttime quiescent phase, and Paul showed that during that nighttime quiescent phase, they are indeed absolutely quiet. It's not clear that they assume a special position. They don't curl up. They don't close any of their 1,400 facets of their compound eyes, but they are indeed immobile during their quiescent phase. And during that same period of time, they have a higher arousal threshold. When he placed the fly vials on top of a boom box and played booms of various intensity, flies that were in a waking state, as defined by the fact that they had been moving around sometime within the past 5 minutes, would respond to any of them by becoming more active. Flies in a quiescent state, as defined by being quiet for at least 5 minutes prior to that, only responded to the loudest of the booms. And then when he stayed up all night himself, tapping on their vials to keep them awake, they would get an appropriate sleep rebound based on the degree of deprivation. In this instance, depending on the amount of deprivation, you can see sort of a dose dependence in the amount of sleep. This is prior to this time period. They would recover proportionally more the more they were deprived. And then in addition, as he mentioned, caffeine keeps them awake, so does methamphetamine. Antihistamines make them drowsy and not suitable for driving motor vehicles. And in a series of elegant molecular studies that were carried out, all this in conjunction with Giulio Tononi and Chiara Cirelli, also at our institute at that time, it was clear that flies show alterations in gene expression between day and night and sleep and waking and sleep-deprived state that are very similar in many respects to those of mammals. So in addition, they also sleep more when they first emerge from metamorphosis and less as time goes on, and so on. They also will die from chronic deprivation. So not having to rely upon a physiological criterion for sleep in the fly, they don't have a cortex, they don't have the same anatomy as you find in a vertebrate, we nonetheless wanted to ask what does go on in their little brains when they're sleeping. And so Doug Nitz at our institute and Bruno van Swinderen devised a technique for recording from the fly brain. This electrode does get a lot smaller by the time it enters the fly's brain. But in a preparation in which the fly is suspended and immobilized by being glued to this wire and has an electrode glued into its head, they actually will sleep under these conditions. They're not terribly happy about it. They don't get a great night's sleep, but they actually do. And what Doug and Bruno found is that there is sort of a general, if this is the fly's activity during the daytime versus the night, and this is sort of what its brain, a general extracellular recording of local field potentials from the middle of the dorsal brain, shows more activity during waking than during sleep. And a series of controls to show that this wasn't simply movement artifact were done, in which we showed that when the fly is paralyzed during the day, it still shows higher activity than at night. Or if you silence that part of the brain selectively so the fly can still move, it shows you lose this particular signal. So it seems to be related to this quiescent state that the fly is in. It doesn't show any slow waves. It doesn't show any preference for a particular frequency to be decreased at night. It's a generalized decrease in local field potential activity. Bruno then also looked a little further at what the characteristics of this might be. And as I said, the flies don't sleep terrifically at night. They do move some under this suspended situation, but less so than during the daytime. This is the hours of night. And the average amplitude of the local field potentials goes down during that time. But if he asked the question, how correlated are these potentials with these movements? He found something that was rather striking, which is a period of time of several hours, usually in the middle of the night, when there is a significant decorrelation between field potentials and movement during the times that the fly is moving. When the fly is not moving, then of course there's no correlation. But given that this does seem to be sort of a difference in an aspect of sleep, we wondered if it might be an intermediate stage of sleep. And the way that Bruno tested that was to ask, do they show a higher arousal threshold when they're in this state of uncorrelated movement with local field potential? And the answer is yes, leading us, therefore, to postulate that this is rapid leg movement sleep. Possibly an intermediate stage of sleep, not necessarily related to REM sleep, not necessarily serving the same function, because we don't know what the function of this is, but we do know that it is a sleep-like state as defined by arousal threshold, and that it shows a period of an extended period of that during the middle of the night. In addition, we also have evidence from another study that Bruno did that the fly's periphery can respond to things and its central nervous system cannot. If he suspends the flies into a little apparatus where they have a light stripe rotating around them in a little sort of arena and records from the optic system, the eye, the optic lobes, versus this central part of the brain that I've shown you previously, he finds that the optic lobes show no difference between day and night. If the fly is kept all night in this situation with the stripe going around it, the eye will continue to give responses. But if you record from this middle part of the brain, there's a distinct decrease that corresponds to nighttime, suggesting that as in vertebrate sleep, there is a cutting off of the center from the periphery. So how general, then, is sleep among invertebrates? And as I said, what might that tell us about the whole aspects of functions of sleep? Well, these studies that I showed you, we were not the first ones to look at invertebrates. Studies going back some 15 years by Walter Kaiser in Berlin on bees and Irene Tobler on various other invertebrates that I'll show you had shown that indeed the criteria of a quiet period, a higher arousal threshold, and a response to deprivation all could be shown in these animals. This is one of Kaiser's studies showing an increase in response of the bee after a period of deprivation. This was shown similarly for the cockroach by Irene Tobler, here showing you the difference in the animals between a deprived and a non-deprived state. So indicating now in this sort of rather impressionistic and now antiquated phylogenetic tree, most of the effort that has been devoted to sleep research, as you've heard, is up here. So it looks as though, at least in three instances, there are insects which will show a sleep-like behavior. Irene Tobler further showed that the scorpion would have a comparable response, higher arousal threshold, and a greater amount of sleep-like response to deprivation. Scorpions are over here. They're related to spiders. They're another kind of arthropod. And then in a very elegant series of studies done a couple of years ago at the Oceanography Institute here in Ted Bullock's lab, they showed that crayfish also would show the same aspects. They would show actually a position corresponding to sleep, which I should say is also seen in aspects of bee sleep and in cockroach sleep. The crayfish would lean against the side of the tank. It also showed a higher arousal threshold, a response to deprivation. And then in something which is truly amazing, he showed that the activity in the brain of these animals in local field potentials showed a frequency-dependent difference between sleep and waking, something kind of like slow waves, which is truly bizarre for an arthropod brain, which has none of the same kind of anatomical structure or layering of a cortex or a thalamus or any of that circuitry that we know of. And it certainly is something that we haven't seen in the fruit fly, and that was not reported in the honeybee either. But if Ted Bullock said it was true, it had to have been true, because Ted was one of the all-time great invertebrate neurobiologists. So there are still things, there certainly are mysteries to try to unravel about what some of the aspects and functions of different parts of sleep are in these invertebrates, but they seem to have various aspects of the phenomenon. Okay, so we've got, basically what we've got is a strong showing here in among arthropods for the presence of sleep. And I would not be surprised if it was a general feature of arthropods. Arthropods are also the invertebrates that have, in some respects, very sophisticated brains, and some of them have very sophisticated behavior. But another animal that also has very sophisticated behavior is the octopus. And the octopus even closes its eyes at night. And in a series of studies that did not see the light of day, but that were quite interesting by a group in Naples, showed that the octopus also will respond to sleep deprivation and has the appropriate behavioral criteria to meet the criterion of sleep. So we've got mollusks, arthropods. What else might you find? Well, there have been a lot of efforts made at trying to demonstrate the presence of sleep in the little nematode C. elegans. Not successful so far. They don't seem to show a circadian quiet period. Fly larvae probably also don't show a circadian quiet period, so there may be something about that juvenile stage that does not require sleep, or in which the animals don't exhibit it. It may well be that they simply have to spend all of their every possible moment eating, which is basically what they do during that stage of their life cycle. There have been a couple of other reports that are vaguely suggestive, but not fully testing the criteria, one of which was a report about jellyfish in Australia. Box jellyfish, which are the ones that kill swimmers all the time off the Australian coast with their incredible venom. This group of investigators actually attached a radio transmitter to a rather large one and monitored its movements over a period of a couple of days, and claimed that for several hours in the middle of the night, the animal would sit down on the bottom of the floor and do nothing. Not clear that this is sleep, as we know, because there have to be other criteria met, but it's an interesting question, given the fact that these animals are the most primitively branching animals that have a full-blown nervous system. It's not a very complex nervous system, but it's got all of the basic components of a nervous system, and some of them, even including some of these box jellyfish that have very sophisticated eyes, are capable of more sophisticated behavior than people have generally given this phylum credit for. So it's an interesting question, one which actually we're starting to culture some of the less dangerous versions of these in the lab in order to try to address. So this begs the question of, what does it take to need to sleep? Does it take a complex brain? Does it take any brain? Does any animal with a nervous system possibly capable of sleeping, or does it require a nervous system at all? And another sort of tantalizing finding in the literature, which we're trying to follow up on, is paramecium. This is the genius of the protozoan world. They have very sophisticated behavior. It's a cell that lives in pond water. You probably looked at them in elementary school. And they have an enormous mosaic of ion channels all over their membranes, mediating a variety of very, very well orchestrated behaviors. They have a quiet period at night. Now, a quiet period, again, is not the same as sleep, but on the other hand, it at least is something that we are trying to track down and see whether it might actually have any of the characteristics of a basic sort of sleep. Now, why would it even be worth looking at such a thing in an animal, in an organism like paramecium? Well, one should bear in mind that circadian rhythms, which are certainly very closely related to sleep, and which you'll hear more about in the next talk, circadian rhythms are quite ubiquitous in the living world. And to everybody's surprise, when the mechanism of it began to be worked out, initially through mutant studies in the fruit fly, it turns out to be a cell-autonomous mechanism. It's played out through the whole brain and through the animal's behavior. But the actual mechanism of the clock goes on inside a single cell or inside many single cells. And it's certainly true in single-cell organisms. It could well be that the origins of sleep are also unicellular and that they've been very much elaborated through evolution as brains developed and got to be much more sophisticated. And it's certainly become clear from molecular phylogenetic studies over the past several years that there's almost nothing about the machinery of nervous systems which is unique to animals. You can find virtually all of the kinds of ion channels and many of the kinds of receptors and other aspects of neuronal machinery in unicellular organisms, and even in bacteria in some instances. So, without making a claim and without showing you any evidence, I just simply want to raise the idea that this may be a very ancient function, which has become very elaborated as our brains have become elaborated. And we're quite interested in tracking this down, seeing if it may be true. I will stop there. Thank you.
Any questions?
Hello. Just a quick one. I assume there's no data for the paramecia on whether that cycle continues in constant light or dark?
It does continue in constant darkness.
It does.
Fantastic. It's a bona fide endogenous rhythm.
Yep. Thank you.
Was there a reason, by the way, why the Naples study was not published?
I don't know.
Okay, so there aren't any more questions. I think one of the reasons, by the way, this is fascinating to me is that I don't get much opportunity to watch crayfish sleeping, and we just don't see it, so we don't know anything about it.